Good evening. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska, and this is Speak Up on Alaska, the KUCB Public Affairs call-in program. I'm Ann Hillman, and today I have with me Councilmember Roger Rowland. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you.
And Nancy Peterson, Head of Public Works here at the City. Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Ann.
And today we will be talking about things like the Boat Harbor and other major projects in the city, and anything you guys would like. So this is your chance to speak up. So speak up and call in. The number is 581-2161. 581-2161. Come up with some questions and go ahead and call in. And while we wait for some people, let's start with some questions people have already submitted. So obviously, biggest topic out there these days is the small boat harbor. What stage are we at?
Okay, this is Roger, and it's kind of a new thing the city's doing. This project called Design Build, the designer and the builder are working together. Most projects, the city has a design firm design it, and then the builder has to build to that exact design. In this case, the designer and the builder are on the same team, and if the builder says, hey, this you know, you want these dock sections 24 feet long and pipe comes in 20-foot sections, why don't we build the sections 20 feet long? And it would save a lot of money. They work together that way all the way through. It's the first time the city's tried this approach. It seems to be working well. I certainly don't know all the details that maybe Nancy Peterson could speak to, but it is a common practice in lots of different industries to do design build. So the city is trying that. So that's we're in that process of designing it now. We have approved the majority of the contract. So I believe they're actually ordering steel and starting to fabricate pieces and parts down below. And I could go on and on and on. I'll try to not go too far here, but the little holdup has been designing a drive-down float that a pickup truck could drive down onto the floating part of the floating apparatus, gangway, whatever you want to call it, to where a boat could load and unload right out of a truck close to the water, designed specifically for the smaller boats, 30, 40, 50, 60-foot range, where the bigger boats have like the spit dock where they can crane stuff on and off with their own crane, where small boats often don't have enough heavy rigging to lift even pallets of bait on and off. So we've been trying to fit that in to the existing plan without having to redo environmental impact statements and all this other stuff if we try to make the project bigger. So we've been trying to fit a small drive-down float into the existing plan, and that's taken several council meetings to hammer out what design we wanted. But the project as a whole is moving forward very well, to my knowledge.
Can you talk a little bit more about that drive-down float? What are the features that it has, it kind of at this final stage of design?
Okay, I believe, and I'm lucky I'm in the studio here with Nancy, so she can kick me if I get the numbers wrong, but I believe it's rated for 30,000 pounds.
Yes, the vehicle payload. and anything that the vehicle's carrying, a total of 30,000 pounds.
Which is what a lot of people thought is what they need, right?
Yes, we had quite a bit of input from local fishermen that were in that size boat range that I mentioned earlier, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet. And they all thought 20 to 30,000 pounds would be sufficient. For one thing, the float is not physically big enough to get a truck big enough to have much more weight than that down there anyway. A standard one-ton flatbed truck has a 10,000 gross vehicle weight. That means truck and cargo is going to be around 10,000 pounds. So to get a truck big enough to be a total weight of 30,000 pounds would be a quite large truck. It probably wouldn't fit on the dock anyway. So anything one of these small boat guys want to take down there is going to be okay. You asked about design parameters of that drive-down float. I believe it's approximately 50 by 60, and I'm not sure the actual driving, that's kind of the overall size.
Yeah, actually, we just got the preliminary designs on both an internal piling setup and an external piling setup on the drive-down float. And the driving surface, which is the part that people are the most concerned about, for the internal piling is about 35 feet by 71 feet. And then for the external piling, the driving surface is 29 feet by about 71 feet. So in order to – one of the things that council helped provide direction to at the last meeting was to widen that float out to equal to about the 60-foot float, the 60-foot slip that was previously there. And so they had to widen it just a little bit more than that based on how the floats are manufactured. So, but they were able to do that, and it's going to work great. So it's going to provide a little extra maneuvering room down there for the vehicles, and we'll get it out to the width that the council was wanting. So it looks good.
Why was that width so important?
Well, a couple of us on the council that have had at least some experience with operating boats were concerned that the drive-down float did not stick out as far as all the slips. And so either coming into and this drive-down float is right at the bottom of the gangway. So the main float goes way out toward the breakwater, and the slip is right up toward the beach, so you'd have to come past all the boats that are tied up and then turn in around the bow of boats to get into this drive-down float. We felt it would be better if they came straight in and leaving. If the wind is blowing hard, a boat steers with its stern. So if the boat wants to go to the right, the stern has to go to the left. It doesn't steer with its front like a car does or a motorcycle. It steers with its stern. And so to pull away from a dock to turn out, the stern of the boat has to go into the dock, and you can't do that because the dock is there, or in this case, the floating drive-down float. But yet the way it was designed, the boat had to turn out to leave. It had to turn out because the first thing it would come to would be sticking out farther than the float. So that's why the council was a little bit adamant at the last meeting about extending this out to where a boat could pull straight away. And once it cleared the edge of the drive-down float, it could kick the stern over to get the bow out a little bit and maneuver on out without risking running into a boat. As we know, there's high winds here, and when a boat is going very slow or maneuvering, it's very susceptible to the wind. Once it's underway and traveling, it tracks through the water well, but it maneuvering away from the dock, it's problematic in the high winds. So that's why we were adamant about making it as long as those closest floats to it.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
I think so.
It was really great discussion at that council meeting, and it was real good input to provide back to the designers. And like I say, they took a look at it, and it looks like we've been able to achieve that, so we're pretty excited.
So
I would add, you asked, Ann, some designs. Also, the crane, there was some talk of moving the pilings. The crane is going to be able to go on the corner, and so it will be able to swing and work a boat, two different boats. Originally, that showed the crane along one side, and it would only be able to operate or be usable by a boat tied up on that side. With it going in the corner, two boats could be tied up at 90 degrees to each other around the edges of this float, and the crane would be able to service both boats. So we're trying to get the most service, the most fishermen, the most we can for the dollars that we're spending, which are a lot, by the way.
Is it known how much this will cost yet?
No, we won't have the costs until the council meeting on Tuesday. They had to get to at least a 35% design development in order for the building part of the team. The design part got to 35, and now the construction part of the team will be able to put the cost proposal together based on this. So they just finished this this morning. And so they've got about 4 days here working over the weekend to develop the costs and get those to us on Tuesday. So council will know the costs on Tuesday night, and they'll have an opportunity to choose either, like I say, we have two different designs here. One is with an internal piling where there is moorage space that a vessel can lay aside that moorage space. And the other one is external piling, which we'll have to do a little bit of modifying in order to allow a vessel to moor against the piling. The external piling is less expensive than the internal, and we won't know until Tuesday night how much less expensive and which one we might be able to afford and be able to pursue.
Okay, and so that is that sort of the major key question still remaining in terms of internal versus external?
Yes, it will. The internal piling is obviously the best choice. It provides the best of everything for the project. But depending on what the cost is for that will depend on whether the council thinks that, I mean, the external piling provides everything that we need, but it won't provide as good a moorage on the southeast side. We'll have to do some modifying. I mean, you know, just we'll have to work with it to allow a vessel to moor there. But so we're hoping that the cost for the internal piling comes in at a fee that is within our budget that we have right now. But we won't know until Tuesday.
Okay. Fair enough. So will the city be charging people to use this drive-down float? Is that known yet?
There won't be a fee to go onto the float, but you know, the Ports Department is working on their operations plan for the harbor, and more than likely the crane will have a fee associated with it. It's very common in harbors now that just with a swipe card, you know, you can access the crane and use it, and then that information automatically goes to the Port Department, and they'll bill you for that use. But the Port Department is working on that, you know, has about a year here to put together their final operations plan on how all of those things will fit together.
Okay. Roger, can you give the listeners an idea of exactly how many small boats there are still around this community that would be using this facility?
Oh, boy. Just the people that actually live here, 15 to 20, I would say. But one reason I've been so adamant about this project and pro, I'm not sure how to phrase my words, but in very supportive of the drive down float, is we, meaning city, state, federal, whatever, we have rationalized most of the fisheries in the Bering Sea. The crab rationalization, the American Fisheries Act, the cod longliners, I believe they're not, they don't have co-ops yet, but they're operating under moratorium. There can't be more boats entering the fishery. The only fisheries that are left open access are the 60-foot and under fisheries. Now, I said the only. That's not true, but most of the bigger boat fisheries have been rationalized. One of the only areas left for just anybody can enter in are these 60-foot and under fisheries, and that's why I was really wanted a facility to support those. I have been contacted by people from out of town. I fish other areas and have all the way from Sitka in southeast Alaska all the way up to Togiak. I've done various fisheries, and so I have friends in other places that contact me occasionally, and one thing I hear from people outside of town is get us a facility for our small boats. We can unload halibut, you know, just a place to tie up and have work done, because this town is really based toward big boats. I know that. I am in the repair business. I own a machine shop that fixes boats, and I am geared toward the bigger vessels, and we don't have I can't even go buy a through-hole fitting for a fiberglass boat here. And in Homer, you can. In Kodiak, you can. Our town is geared toward bigger boats. But the only area left for anybody to come fish is the small boat fisheries. And so locally, our little crab fishery supports 10 to 20 people every year. And they're all local right here. That's where I come up with that number. And there's a few more people maybe that used to do the herring fishery in the summertime. But there's a raft of these 60-foot and under boats from other areas that come in, participate in our fisheries, need services, and leave. And we're collecting revenue off them when they're here, whether it's tax dollars from the fish they sell or whether it's services they're using and creating jobs in the community. So that's why I'm very supportive of this project. But I can't give you a hard number of all those other vessels from other towns. I'm sorry. I got long-winded on the answer, Ann. I'm sorry.
No, perfectly fine. I mean, it's good to hear that people really are interested in other places. With the entire facility, how many slips will be there? Will there be for smaller boats?
Oh, boy. I bet we have that number, Nancy.
We have that number.
I love that she has the facts.
The new harbor, the way that it has been configured and modified and added on with some of the amendments we've done recently, the moorage looks something like this. There will be 8 slips for 150-foot vessels, 9 slips for 130, 11 for 115, 13 for 100, 6 for 90, 11 for 60, and 8 for 32. Between the 60 and the 32, there's a flexibility there depending on what length the vessel is. It'll adjust those 19 slips that are available right there. And, you know, we have a 130-foot slip that could easily accommodate 2 60-foot vessels. So, you know, we're going to be mixing and matching with what's the best use of the harbor. So a lot of flexibility in the design for moorage.
Okay. Would you, if necessary, even be willing to moor some of the smaller boats along the sea float?
Only if there's not a large vessel that needs to go in there. But it is designed for transient as well as permanent moorage. So there may be, you know, boats will get shuffled around there depending on what the need is.
All right. Great.